I have a few of our faithful with us today, and some here too, to let you know that there's a movement in our diocese, and we're right on it, to invite a few so that we stay no more than 9 total in the church at a time. And so there's a sign-up sheet. And the reason I'm saying that's here on camera is because reports are that the email that we set out to inform people went to some people's spam, so they didn't know about it. So I'm trying to follow up now with other ways to let people know about this. Of course, for now, we have to limit that to registered members because, again, it's only a few people, and we want to make sure that our registered members at St. Mary's get a chance to come to Mass now. So we have a few people out here that are here, and I'm so excited about that. And I'm always choking back tears. Just before Mass this morning, I got a call from a very good friend of mine. Him and 3 other priests, we have been best friends for all of our seminary days and all of our priesthood. About the 2nd year in seminary, we started vacationing together. My grandfather had a place up north on a lake, and we would go up there for the week. That's since been sold, and so we've been doing like vacation properties every summer to try to mimic how amazing it was with that place up on the lake. Anyway, so we've been very close for all these years. One of my priest friends died this morning. So I'm raw. And you know, I've been preparing for this sermon today, but you know, I just say that up front. Please pray for Father Peter, the repose of soul, Father Peter Jarrows. And I know a lot of people who are watching have had death. This wasn't COVID-19. It was other issues, and he wasn't a sick man, but. Something, and I guess I'll find out later what exactly happened, but he passed away this morning. I want to say this about him, that he too had the same dream that I've had for all my priesthood, and therefore the same mission. And it points to it in the first reading, I'm sorry, the second reading. It says, conduct yourself with reverence during this time of sojourning, of missioning, of traveling. And then we get to the story of the road to Emmaus, okay? And actually, if you look at this story, what's being told here is the Mass. They gather. And then they break open the Word. And then they do some introspection, the penitential rite, right? Then the climax, if you will, the ultimate of the Mass, is the breaking the bread, right? So they recognize, their eyes were opened, and they recognized him in the breaking of the bread. I don't know if I'll get more information in the future and change my mind, but it hasn't happened for, and I always talk about my 10th anniversary when I went to a Mass with John Paul II as kind of a moment where, you know, it clicked, the light came on, I recognized him. Again, I'm not saying, I didn't believe that was Christ on that altar prior to that, but I had other ways to try to attract people to come to the Mass. And that was to have a really great nightclub act, you know, a really great Broadway musical, so that it would be entertaining for the folks. That's just where I was. And I believed, you know, from what I knew, that was just what was going on in Catholic world during those times. So I was ordained in 88, you know, that would have been 88 to 98. But, you know, in that experience, I've told it so many times, so I'm not going to recount it again here. But needless to say that when I encountered such reverence, and that's how you can describe it. sacred beauty, sacred architecture, sacred offering of the Mass, sacred music. I'm going, what were we thinking with our Broadway musicals and our nightclub acts and our little casual experience? And so, and if you look at the story of the road to Emmaus, they're heading away from Jerusalem. Okay, they're going in the wrong direction. From that moment on, I turned around and headed back. And to the best of my ability, and my ability may fall way short, I don't know, you know, but to the best of my ability, I tried to track this to where I believe with all of my heart, all of my mind, all of my soul, all of my strength, that the way the church needs to go. We need to offer this Mass as if God is really here. I've been, you know, this has been my mantra in homilies you've heard over the past. And I hope what the way I'm preaching, what I'm saying, is received with the charity I'm desperately trying to give, and I might be animated. I hope that doesn't come across as being cross or negative or anything. I'm so hopeful that a beautiful gift given to me just last week, a lovely lady called me about some other thing, and she says, I just want to share a story with you. And those who have been watching my homily heard me tell this last week, but I want to tell it again in the context of the news I received before Mass this morning, that my uncle, who was a priest, he passed away last year, but this was 10 or 12 years ago, that he had an abdominal aortic aneurysm. He bled out completely. Two neurologists said that he was dead, he was brain dead, a little bit of brainstem activity, nothing there. But at a funeral that he had for this woman's uncle, at the sermon, he says, I've never told anybody this story. And I have no recollection of ever hearing the story either. So I was hearing it for the first time as she recounted what he said at that funeral. He said that he met my mom. He said in the funeral homily, his sister, he only has one sister, my mom, who had passed away some 4 or 5 years before that. He said he met my mom in a beautiful garden. And they had a lovely conversation. And then she said, it's not your time yet. You got to go back. And he resisted. I don't want to go back. This is amazing here. It's not your time. And he actually, there was, you know, back and forth. And the next thing he knew, he woke up. And just to fill in that story a little bit, we were praying hard. I actually got a stone from the Pool of Bethesda where the miracle healings occurred. I gave it to him. And then the next time I saw him, he was awake, and he says, hi, Rick, how you doing? So a miracle from God. Why do I insert that into this morning? First of all, God's amazing. I got that story that says when we pass from this life to the next, it's going to be paradise. We're going to meet, like he did, my mom. And I believe that Father Peter, my best friend, probably had some kind of conversation, and they say, okay, it is your time. So stay in this paradise. And again, I'm praying so hard, Peter, please, will you now be my prayer warrior? I pray that to my mom all the time and my uncle. Because I think, at least I believe I'm right about this right now. Again, somebody can change my mind. But I'm alarmed when I see 70% of professed Catholics no longer believe this is God on this altar. Now, I don't know what other Catholics or priests or bishops are doing. I put the best intentions on them that they're doing this, what I'm about to say. I'm in this to save souls. Okay, not to build a brand, but to find out what's missing. And then to work at fixing that. So if the experiment of the last 50 years of casualizing this breaking of the bread, this most holy Eucharist, has left us now with 70% don't believe this is God, we have to track another way. We have to turn back. And realize this, another reason I understand this is because I know the devil hates this. Okay? This trying to restore reverence, praying the Mass as if this is truly God on that altar. He hates this with a passion. You know why I know this? Talk to any priest in any parish. They so much as try to move the tabernacle to the middle, and the Saul Alinsky attacks begin. Their reputation is ruined. Letters to the bishop. I remember a local parish had protests outside the doors of their church. I mean, it's shocking the level of vitriol because the priest wants to offer a reverent Mass. The devil hates this. Here's the other tactic the devil's using. This traditional movement is starting to surge, and it's beautiful. Now all the people that are involved in it are attacking each other. You know, at once I thought what we were doing here, and trust me, I have such a deep love for my parish family, I can't even describe it. And I pray it's mutual. We're tight. And I think that's because our eyes have been open. And virtually all of them are using all the beautiful jewels of our Catholic faith, the rosary to begin with, chaplets and all kinds, novenas, and we're just breaking it all open together. I one of the best decisions I ever made, I always say, is after every Mass, we have coffee and donuts afterwards. So we could just stop. You know, it's not inside the Mass, it's outside the Mass, but we just stop and just be with each other, enjoy each other's company. And I always say you could cut the joy with a knife in that place. And a sense of family. You know, that once we've now received Christ, we can now bring to the world. And I know, and my eagerness, and this is, I ask my parish family, please, if you're not doing this, and I think a lot of you are because I've seen experiences of this, but I always say, I go to the grocery store, the gas station, anywhere I go, come to the 9:15 Mass. You're not going to believe it. It's like walking into heaven for an hour. And honestly, the reason why I keep doing it, because I get encouraged with each response that I get. Because they're not like, you know, eyes glazing over or changing the subject. They're like, really? Well, tell me more about that. I might just come. And some have. You see, the Mass is the place where eyes are made open. If we offer it as if God is here. The other reason I know the devil hates this, my uncle, the priest, distanced himself from me for many years because he was convinced, and this was his belief, that we need to have the more casual and he didn't like what we were doing here. And I'll just be honest, we're in that sacristy over there before my 25th anniversary Mass. And he hadn't talked to me in years. And he turned to me and says, I'll try to endure this. There's a man who was instrumental in me becoming a priest. The devil hates this. The devil hates this. See, that's a good sign. That's a good sign. I could have abandoned it and just went, you know what? I don't like that my uncle's estranged from me. I don't like that many of my brother priests are. I always had Bishop Marlino's great support and encouragement. But it's not easy. And I know it's not easy for our brother priests. So here, I'm going to wrap things up here. This is where I am with this now. And we've been talking it through. We recently talked to Dan Burke, who ran the National Catholic Register. And we were on the same page with it. He keeps saying it's a laity. And all of us priests say, no, it's our fault. But I think what he's getting at is here. Everyone who's listening to me, please, support your priest. When he wants to move back towards reverence, not away from Jerusalem on the road to Damascus, but turn him back. Support him publicly. Prayer is great, but I always tell people prayer should motivate you to action. Publicly support him. Okay? That's a lot of the reason why here at St. Mary of Pine Bluff, I had, and priests will contact me and say, I like what you're doing there. I too believe in that. How did you do it? And I'll say, here's the first thing that Jesus did. And I've come to understand this. The first thing Jesus did is he got 12 around him. They were a united front. Support your priest who's trying to do these things. And then what is he? And then the pushback simmered down, and then people were only left with, and it was a handful, to just go to other parishes beside this one. Hurts like you won't believe. I love souls. I love them all. But we have to move in this direction. So that what? So that more and more souls will be saved because they recognize him in the breaking of the bread. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.